Hi, I'm Sean. I've always been curious about the answers to life's big questions. I thought it would be cool to seek some of those answers through conversations with others on a similar path. I started this podcast with a simple mission. I want to help you improve your life. These conversations are meant to challenge you, make you think, and to inspire you to pursue the things in life that light you up. I've always believed that with the right mix of effort and perseverance, anything truly is possible. I'd like to invite you to think outside the lines. What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Think Outside the Lines podcast. My guest today is an author, podcaster, and HuffPost contributor who's been featured hundreds of times in the media for her views on influence, leadership, and identity. She's also an international speaker and, of all things, the trademarked ambassador of happiness. What's important to note is that what she's accomplished has been self-created, self-generated, and self-styled starting at age 50. Our conversation is full of inspiration and insight, and I'm so excited for you to hear it. It's time to think outside the lines with Maura Sweeney. Welcome to the show, Maura Sweeney. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. And awesome. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. I'm so excited for our conversation. Now, tell me about your greatest desire in life at the moment.
Oh my gosh, my greatest desire. I think this has been my desire since I was in preschool. I want to see a better, happier, and more unified world. And when I say world, I'm talking about people. I'm talking about society. I'm talking about relationships. I'm talking about people's giftings, their talents, their abilities, and literally working together and really having a good time doing and living.
I love that so much. And you know what's funny? My follow-up question to that is always, what do you believe to be the message you were brought here to share with the world? And I feel that you touched upon that, actually. But I'd love for you to maybe elaborate a little bit more about kind of what it is you're doing to facilitate all that.
I do a lot of things, but they all relate to the same thing. My mantra is living happy from the inside out. And so if you want to think about our insides, it's not the religion we grew up with, the era in which we were born, the lifestyle we've had, the culture. It doesn't matter. I'm talking about the heart and the soul that defines the human experience. And I really want to see a world where people know each other from the inside, where they know each other spirit to spirit, soul to soul, rather than, oh, you're part of that political party, or, oh, you're part of the haves or the have-nots. There's so much polarity and so much division. I honestly don't know how to think that way, Sean. So what I do through my podcast, my books, my international and national speaking, all of it, I try to bring people into that space where they say, you know what? I see where we're alike. I see where we all relate to the same stuff. And what it does is it helps through stories that I use, it helps to break down all of those man-made mental and emotional barriers. And I think it's a very good segue to bringing out the society I really believe is always hiding behind the one we're living under.
Yeah. I actually love all of that. And I think your message feels particularly timely, I guess I would say. In the notes that you sent over before the interview, you referenced the disempowering chatter of division and strife, which I love that. It feels kind of right now as if, particularly in America, that there's so much division and strife, and they don't seem to be going away anytime soon. In fact, I think most people are paying attention to things like politics for the first time in maybe their lives. And it's causing a lot of people some significant anxiety. So for those of us who want to move forward and try to bridge that divide, what are some solutions that you suggest?
Oh, what a gigantic question. Well, let me preface it by saying, yes, yes, yes. All of your observations, I would definitely agree with, but I would want to broaden it. Sean, I travel a lot and I meet people everywhere and I'm constantly interviewing and I read from a variety of sources, which have a variety of perspectives. Yeah. And I'll tell you, it's not just here in the U.S. It is also in places like Western Europe, where there are so many issues that are arising. And I'm going to tell you, I think a lot of these things press on people's sense of either maintaining a status quo or having something happen that threatens who they are, what they are, or what they believe in. And I think that that expresses a lot of the anxiety that we are seeing today. am a great observer of the human condition, but also of all kinds of people's perspectives. And I will tell you that wherever I go, I don't look for places for division, but I'll always either ask a question, ask people how they feel on a topic, get their perspective on something, and usually people do it by way of stories. Sometimes I'll introduce new information because I think right now, and again, not just in the US, but also in other places, we have various external sources that are vying for attention and vying for superiority. And I think they're playing a lot of the American public in that episode. And I think a lot of people don't realize they're being played. Their buttons are being pressed. There are words that are going out, and people identify with certain groups and demographics. And they find themselves literally fighting against one another. But if you come down to the real world, which is where most of us live when we're not watching TV, not tuning into the news. And I could tell you this, even like several last times that I've been to New York City, even as the election was in full swing toward, the early part of last fall, I saw people from every background, all nationalities, every color, all interacting. So my take is we all need to be a little bit more aware of whether or not we are responding to stimuli from the outside elements. And by this, I'm talking about the media. Or whether we're really looking at people on a day-to-day basis and knowing them just by who they are and giving everybody a chance to be themselves while we are ourselves. And I think the answer is not going to be a political party. It's not going to be some kind of legislation. It's not going to be who ends up on top. It's going to be the role of each one of us stepping out and becoming a person of positive influence in the world. And that means being a good citizen, making room for other people, maybe speaking up when we need to if someone's being harmed, and I'm talking about physically harmed or whatever, but being real rather than always waiting for some supposed big person, big authority, or big institution to fix things for us.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, actually. I guess I would ask you, you touched upon a moment ago the threat that some people feel, and I wonder how much of that threat is perceived versus like real danger.
I love that question, and I would love to ask the same to everyone because my sense is that the majority of the sense of threat is a perceived one. Because if you invite people, or I shouldn't even say invite people, if you want to compare the conversations people will have, let's say in the social media sector, versus where they are in their neighborhood, where they are when they go out to work, or in their community, the people they're dealing with at the grocery store,
Totally.
there's a dissonance there. The real world gets along far better than the media would have us believe, or the political pundits.
So I'm so fascinated by that because I agree with you 100%. And it's funny because, so I am not conservative by any means, but I grew up in a very conservative family and my family still is conservative. So the election season was pretty challenging for us to get through. And it continues to be in a lot of ways. But what I find most interesting about that is I live in Los Angeles, which is like a cultural mecca, melting pot, you know, what have you. And so I actually have like firsthand insight into how race relations work. And you know what I mean? I mean, to an extent. And it's so funny what you say because I think so many people that are sharing these like, you know, horrifying what ifs on social media aren't even exposed to that, and they probably never will be.
That is so funny that you would say so. And I'll tell you another place I've seen it. I would tell you I have seen it on several university campuses that
Interesting.
there's this mindset that all of a sudden emerges and people just believe it and it becomes groupthink and group identification, but it is not real. And the reason why I say it's not real is that I have been watching and studying American culture, let's say from the mid 1800s when we had the Industrial Revolution onward. I just love culture. I love change. I love watching the icons. I love to see how changing values take place. And I'm going to tell you a lot of problems we think we have today with the races. I think a lot of them have been literally conjured up because certain people, and I'm not pointing any fingers because I'll tell you an interesting story at the end of this, profit. and profiteer based on getting people excited and creating and fomenting that sense of danger. And let me offer this. This happened maybe over a decade ago. If you're familiar with Dick Morris for over a decade, I guess, was the political consultant to the Clintons when they
Correct.
were in Arkansas, all the way up to Washington, D.C., the White
Yeah.
House. But then I happened to meet with him in a setting several years ago when he was in between the Clinton era, which would have been obviously the Democrats,
Yeah.
and what he now does, which is he's a mouthpiece for the right.
Yeah.
And he happened to be at this real interesting juncture. And I said to him, "Tell me something. Now that you've had experience on both sides, or you've seen both sides, I said, what in your estimation is the biggest thing keeping, let's say, Congress members on the right and the left from working together and solving the problems?" He said to me, "That is the most brilliant question I've ever been asked in 25 years that I've been doing this." Now, to me, it was a very obvious one. I figured he'd be in the know, right? Okay. He said that was the most brilliant question. He said, "Let me tell you this, and I believe there's so much truth to this, Sean." He said, "People in Congress, or you could say people, doesn't matter, Republicans, Democrats," he said, "if they sat together in the same room," and by the way, many of them do work together behind the scenes. He said, "If they were to sit down for a half hour, they could solve the majority of their problems, but they never will." And he said, "Let me tell you why. They need the problems. They need the enemies out there, because without a perceived enemy, there's nothing to fight for, and therefore, there's nothing to garner the financial support they're all looking for." Now, that's why I'm telling you, and I'm so glad you're asking me this question. I had no idea we'd be going in this direction. But Sean, if we want to see a better world, a better society, a better human race, barring no specific group, okay, then we each need to know that we don't have to respond to everyone else's invitation for a fight or for a judgment against another group of people. We instead can be free to be who we are, to be good citizens, to be kind, to be generous, to be creative, to literally just be good people and see other people in the same way, rather than falling into all of these silos of the day. And I'm telling you, after we're done with these current groups of identity politics people, we'll find new ones in the next couple of years. It's just we move from one zone to another, and unless we're mindful enough, we're going to keep being pawns in somebody else's game.
So I'm very much aligned with that, and my hope is that we can use conversations like this to drive the conversation forward, because I think the conversation is starting to get a bit stale. And so I think that the people like us that actually potentially could come up with like solutions, and you know what I mean? I like that.
Yes.
So
You know, I'm so glad you're mentioning this. I want to tell you one more thing. A few months ago, I was in New York listening to a panel discussion,
yeah.
and it was about women in politics and whatever. And I could watch, there were five people in that line of conversants, and it went from totally angry, and we've got to get out there and basically fight everybody, to the last person who was sitting on that panel who kept saying, "Wait a minute, before we make such comments about other people, have you ever gone across the aisle and listened?" And as I'm sitting in the audience, what I hear are people going, "Ah." It was literally an opportunity, an invitation to get to know our neighbor. And I said to this woman, she was from MSNBC, but she didn't have a whole background in media. And I told her what I found, and she said, "Thank you so much." She said, "I really do look to work with other people." And I said, "I think that that's where we're moving. People on the far extremes are bowing out of the fight, and they're just looking for a little bit of peace."
I actually took a break from doing the show for a while after the election, because for a moment it felt to me like things were just continuing to get worse before they got better. And I kind of still feel like some of the evidence around us is pointing for that to be true, but it is my ultimate sense of optimism and the desire to contribute something positive to the world that inspires me to keep going. And that's why I, brought the show back. I have a podcast, you have a thriving business. What tips, and a podcast, what tips do you have for somebody who might be in search of their calling in this realm, but perhaps, just for someone who has a desire to contribute something bigger to the world?
Oh, I'm so glad. Do you know, I often, for that question, I often remind people to get out of their headspace. Our headspace is everything we're programmed in and everything we hear all the time. But get into the heart space, which might sounds a little bit esoteric, but it's not meant to. Close your eyes, put your hand over your your heart and just ask yourself one simple question like this. What was I doing when I was growing up that I loved? What was I doing when nobody was paying attention, that nobody told me I could or couldn't do? What kind of things made me happy? And when people at conferences or wherever I am, when I ask them this question and they have their hand over their heart space, they're really connecting with their soul. And it's inevitable, whether it's right there on the spot or very soon in the day, they will come upon or happen upon a time period in their life when they were playing a game or doing something or watching something or creating something, and it'll make them smile. I always invite people to reconnect with those places and spaces. Mine happened to be looking up at the sky at airplanes and wanting to travel the world and meet people everywhere they were. And the other thing, because for me, that was making new friends of all different persuasions. And the second thing I used to do when I was growing up is I was supposed to be an attorney. That was my career path as far as my family was concerned. I used to spend time at my grandfather's law office, but rather than being concerned with what he was doing, I was so taken up with his secretary's typewriter. This is way back in the day. And I couldn't get over how she would create documents that other people would review and think about and act upon. And even before I could read, Sean, I remember thinking, oh, I'd love to have an idea or things I could write about that other people would read and think about and talk about. Now, the reason why I mention all this for anyone who's listening today, if they were to take that time in the quiet of the day, I don't care if it's 5 minutes, and go back to those simple times and stop saying, what did everybody tell me to be? Or what did everybody say was important? Or what did I tell myself I had to be? And go back to some of those times, those early parts of our lives where we're interested in something, we're excited about something, and wherever we're smiling, that's a little bit of a thread that connects with our soul, and I believe will be a thread that will not only help enable us be a person of purpose, because our soul has an opportunity to expand and to do something in that arena, but will also be a key to how we can incorporate those things we love into doing something that will help support us in a career. And I think that's a big key to feeling happier and then creating a healthier society too.
So I love that so much because I think what it really comes down to is stopping all the chatter that's around us. We live in a world today with so much stimulation that whether it's social media, whether it's the device we're staring at all day, or so many other distractions, that it sounds to me like what you're saying is if you just stop and listen to the things that have always mattered to you, those things probably still matter to you, and you can do something great with that.
Yes, and you know what? You can even tailor them into things you love. Like right now, what I'm doing, I feel like I was made for this role as a global ambassador. I'm getting ready now to, I think in a few weeks, I'll be heading out with my husband to Southeastern Europe, and I'll be speaking at several universities and also leadership conferences and national women's groups that are involved in entrepreneurship. Now, that's stuff I love to do, but I have to tell you, I didn't start there. Several years ago, I had a corporate career and I was in management, leadership. Now, I didn't even choose that career. The career kind of chose me out of sales. But what I learned in that corporate environment is how much I love to find great people, train people, find their skills and their abilities and turn them into experts and work out environments that were winning corporate cultures. And so we can find these ways to connect with what's important to our soul and our sense of well-being and find ways to take those skills and interests and work them wherever we are. And here's another tip for people to know. I didn't have to go, seeking out the Harvard study that was it Sean Aker did on the happiness advantage, showing that when people are happy, they do better. I displayed that and I learned that when I had my corporate career because I always made sure that our offices had happy people that had space to grow and share what they did, and everybody had to respect one another. We all did that. And we ended up being so successful individually as well as collectively. When people feel they're valued, when they're given space to do and express themselves and become their best version of self, the creativity, the energy, and the success multiplies.
So I'm again, I love all of that. I think that that's kind of that's a relatively new movement in the corporate space, though, wouldn't you say?
It is.
Yeah.
I was ahead of the curve, but it
Totally.
works. It works.
It does, and I wish that more companies would adopt that philosophy because when your people are happy, like your people are your soul, right? And so when your people are happy and fulfilled, they're going to contribute in better ways. And so I'm really glad that a lot of corporations are starting to realize that. I think we're still a little behind though in that realm.
You know what? I totally agree with you, and I want to tell you why I think that's the case. People know it's the better way.
Yeah.
I think there's empirical evidence that shows it, but the people are the ones that get in the way of expressing it, because oftentimes people are fearful. And I think there comes a time and a place where we have to be authentic. We have to be willing to trust ourselves. We have to be willing to trust others, and we have to be not just authentic, but we have to be people of integrity, and it requires a lot of courage to be that kind of a person. I was fortunate in the sense that I worked for corporations. I was managing field offices that were away from the corporate culture, and I would take it upon myself, I think, to make changes because they were germane to who and what I was. And there were a lot of times I thought, oh, I feel like I'm risking some things on my end to let other people grow. But the bottom line was, when you are willing to be a little bit more transparent with people, when you do trust, when you do set yourself up as an example of, let's say, this is the way we're going to model, and you are consistently that way, people will ultimately catch that spirit and move in it. Doesn't mean that there's not threats along the way of people going outside of the lines, but it really requires a lot of courage to be that kind of a leader and to invent and constantly model that good quality in a corporate environment. But it is so well worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we could have an entire separate conversation about leadership, because it
Yeah,
sounds
we
like,
could.
yeah, you've got a lot of insight in that realm. You say that you focus on what makes us alike happy, valuable, fulfilled, and relevant to a world in need of something better. I'm wondering if you can elaborate on what you believe it means to be relevant in a world in need of something better.
How about if I answer the question this way? Because I think this is where we're going. I've been conducting my own global survey on what it is that makes us happy. What are these things that we want in life that will actually make us happy, assuming happiness is what we're all after,
Yeah.
bottom line in life? And so these are people from every age, from I think 27 states, 25 countries, every different background. You ready? These are the things that people have. When I want to distill all their answers down about how do you define happy? You ready? First one, healthy relationships. Healthy relationships, that means we don't want more drama. We want to be around people that we are giving to, they give to us, and it's a give and take that actually makes us feel like we can grow. So that's the first. We're all looking for peace of mind. Now, how often do we find our lives at odds with a sense of peace of mind? The third thing we're looking for is freedom. And that, what does that mean? It means freedom to be who we are, to express ourselves, to have time to pursue those things that are important to us. The next thing people are looking for is purpose and fulfillment. This, think about this, whether it's in a corporate environment, whether you are an entrepreneur, whether you are somebody who's retired and looking for your next thing to do. You say to yourself, what are the things that I'm really interested in? What things do I want to grow in or experiment with or practice or expand into? Those are the things that make us feel like our heart is full. And the last thing people want to feel happy is a sense of personal confidence. So if we have healthy relationships, we live our lives in a state of peace of mind, we have freedom to kind of be who we want to be, we exercise those things that are important to us, we develop who and what we really are, then we don't need to be at odds and against everybody else because we're too busy doing and being that better and bigger self of who we'd like to express. And that's something I think that not only helps each one of us, but what we're doing when we live in that space, Sean, is we are inspiring other people to live in similar fashion. Does that kind of answer that question?
Yes, in fact,
Oh, good.
you skipped ahead. You skipped way far ahead. So I'm really fascinated by these five things we all want, and I actually want to dive into each one maybe a little bit deeper if you're open to that.
Sure.
So with respect to healthy relationships in particular, I think this is probably one of the greatest challenges for all of us because we meet people when we're younger, and we sometimes like I've gotten better at this, but I think some people you feel this obligation to maintain relationships that you've had for your entire life, when in fact, a lot of those are probably very toxic and no longer serving you in any way, right? So I want to know, do you have any tips and tricks for people that might be dealing with some of these challenges with past relationships that are, whether they're creeping in the future, they're still a part of their lives, and we recognize that they're toxic. How do we eliminate those relationships to allow for the new energy to come in?
Ooh, and you know what? It's so central, isn't it, to our sense of peace?
Totally.
Great question. You're right. We all have toxic relationships, or let's say relationships that have far too much drama, or we're involved in relationships where maybe someone is taking undue advantage of us, correct? Here's the
Yeah.
first thing I always say to my, and this is all self-taught, so I don't mean to put myself out there as like I'm the expert, but when I have found myself in uncomfortable positions, this is what I have to say to myself. What role have I played in this? You know, it always takes two to tango. You can't do a dance unless you have two people. So I have to say to myself, where did I give my permission to this relationship? And therefore, how can I start removing my permission from this toxic or this very high drama relationship? And sometimes it means things like having just a little bit less time, separating the time periods when we get together, limiting the conversations, not picking up the bait that somebody wants to head out our way.
Yeah.
And you know, I want to say the short answer to it is by doing it incrementally, piece by piece, little by little. And I'll tell you why. Sometimes, especially when we're young and we enter into relationships, those things form in us very deeply. And so, how do we get out of bad habits? We sometimes have to do it a step at a time and a piece at a time. Sometimes we need to forgive ourselves and forgive others. And then sometimes we just have to let it go. You know, sometimes I know there are some people, they just want to argue all the time. And we have to decide, do I want to be part of this?
Yeah.
And the thing is, we don't have to argue back. Someone, I had one person one day say to me, Maura, you don't even seem like you're human, because this person had so much negative baggage and so many fears she was working with, and she was actually getting to the point where she wanted to make me the focal point of her arguments. And I just turned around and I asked her a couple of reflective questions, and she got infuriated further. But here's the second part of it: because I gave her nothing more to fight with, the relationship kind of naturally just went away, because she needed to be in a relationship to fight with somebody, and I just wasn't giving it. So
Totally.
I think it's incremental. We ask ourselves what part and what role we're playing in it. We look to see how we can start to withdraw our emotional consent to it, withdraw a little bit at a time. We don't need to ever be mean, but there's opportunities because we're all free and we can start stepping out.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the interesting thing about healthy relationships is that they transcend, like, they're not just romantic. I think we see that word relationship sometimes and we think, oh, r romantic, right? But healthy relationship can be with a best friend that you've had for 20 years. It can be with an employer, right? Like, there's so many different,
Right.
yeah.
Absolutely. It could be with siblings, with parents. It could be with a boss. I mean, there's all kinds of things. You're right. Peer pressure. It doesn't matter. But we have to really take stock, and that's one of the things I have in my books. It sort of runs through, because I, again, always use myself as the guinea pig. It's what role am I playing in my so-called problem? And am I seeing myself as a victim, or can I use this as a means of opening my eyes, getting a little perspective, and starting to convert some of my thoughts and my behaviors and my intentions? And as surely as we got ourselves into a lot of these things, we can start to step ourselves out of them.
Totally, and that brings us into peace of mind, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I think we've talked a lot about techniques for achieving better peace of mind, especially today. So I'm going to move on to freedom because I think this word is such a big one for me. And I was actually so Oprah Winfrey has a new book out, and it's conversations with all of the people that she's done like Super Soul Sunday interviews with, and so It's really fascinating because it's literally like some of the best like personal development gurus like wrapped into one long interview. And one of the people that she talked to specifically referenced freedom, and how from their perspective, freedom is actually the most important thing that we all long for, because with freedom comes so many other things. And so I'm really, really fascinated by that word and what it means to you, and what it could potentially mean to somebody listening, and how you can achieve that liberation.
You know what? That word freedom is more powerful than we realize. And I kid you not. Freedom is in the eye, the mind, and the emotions of the beholder. I want to tell you that I used to have a corporate job. Maybe I had a nice title, I had a great income. But in my former life, I did not feel free because it meant that my alarm for a decade would go off at 5:45 in the morning, and I would need to be in my car 7:15 in the morning. I might get home at 7 o'clock at night. People might have looked at me and thought, "Oh, you know, Maura, she's got a great title. She lives in a nice house. She's got a great income. She must be, that's my idea of freedom." And you know something? I knew all well and good that although I enjoyed the people I worked with, that I was not a free person.
Totally, that's the
These,
opposite of freedom.
see, but it's also in everyone's personal life because let me tell you, there are some people, I had an old manager when I was a recruiter in my pre-corporate days, and this guy would be at his office at 4 a.m. every day, smoking cigarettes, drinking black coffee, and taking Tums. And for him, this is crazy. He was brilliant, but he literally lived for his work. So in his mind, freedom for him meant I'm free to get up and be at my office at 4 in the morning. But it was his idea of freedom. He loved what he was doing. For me, my idea of freedom is I want to be free for relationships. I want to be free to go out and explore and learn and travel. So I think everyone needs to ask themselves, you know, what's freedom for me? And I think sometimes we do get all caught up in the things or the shiny objects that the world tells us are important. So it might be, you know, the fancy car, the big house. Not that there's anything wrong with any of that, right?
Yeah.
There isn't. If that truly is what makes you happy. But I have to tell you too, I have been on the other side of things where people have tried to convince me to take, you know, to take another promotion or to buy this, that, or the other thing. But what they don't realize is that when you do take that additional promotion, it's more work coming out of you every day. Or if you do buy the bigger house or make that bigger financial commitment, they're not paying for it. You are. So you really have to go inward and say, is this something that speaks for me? What's the trade-off? Is this something I really love? I have to tell you what I do when I travel a lot. I may travel to places like Kosovo, Macedonia, Serbia, you know, places that maybe other people don't go. They may not like what I'm doing. For me, it's freedom because I'm out there. I'm meeting with people from such different backgrounds and different, you know, even different former political environments. I love it. So we really have to be honest with ourselves to say, what is it that really represents who I am and what I love? And as I do it, then that's my version of freedom.
I love that because I think that sums it up perfectly. It's freedom is your version of freedom, and so it can look different for everybody, right?
And we can't dictate it to one another. And I just want to make this point again, too. And this is something I could almost, I'm very empathic in the sense that I could always feel other people. You know, I have seen people that look like they're living the greatest life. You could take a lot of Hollywood stars, and how many of them, they look like they're the beautiful people. And the next thing you learn a few years later, they're on drugs. They've had multiple failed relationships. They can't, you know, they're coming in and out of rehab. My heart goes out to these people. They may look glittery and glamorous, but they're not free because if they were, they wouldn't be struggling so deeply. So that's why I always invite people, get out of your headspace, get out of what everybody else is telling you, get back into your heart space, let your soul talk to you for a few minutes, and start following after that vein. And you end up, it's almost like following the breadcrumbs back to who you are, what you are, and the life you really want. It's not always easy because sometimes it does require getting out of some of those bad relationships or whatever and making some trade-offs, but the end result is we feel far more alive, happy, and at peace.
I want to come back to your overall message, which is that we needn't be limited by what others, whether it's elders, institutions, or even socially structured beliefs, have to say about our ability to self-develop and actualize. I align with this so much because I've always felt like a free spirit, and each of the things on that list have always felt limiting to me, in some way, in terms of the constraints and the expectations that they place really on our souls. So I would love to kind of hear more about your thoughts about institutions and how they play into maybe even the freedom that we touched upon a minute ago.
Well, let me open up with this thought. I learned several years ago that studies have been done with little children who, before they start school, the majority of which, I mean the vast majority, test out as being in the genius category. But the longer they are in school, and I want you to think of the box, the desk, the few silos that we use to determine what is approved, what's unapproved, what we want, what we don't want, that
Totally.
as the years go on, fewer and fewer kids will, or a lesser and lesser percentage will test out as being genius. And I think that that little study goes right to the heart of the human experience. When we come into this world, before our parents, before our economics, before our maybe sometimes our cultural upbringing, our teachers, everything around us says, oh no, you can't do that, or oh no, you can't do this. The world and the sky is the limit. But the more we hear the negative messaging or the siloed messaging say, oh, well, you need to be here and that person goes there, the more we end up trying to live as in a carbon copy of someone else who's gone ahead of us, rather than saying, who am I? What do I love? What are some of my skills? I am thoroughly convinced that some of the best abilities we have are left somewhere in a shelf of things we forgot about because we're too busy doing everything society tells us. And I want to use myself as a case in point. I was supposed to be this attorney until I found myself halfway through law school doing everything I was told and feeling like at age 23 I was going to die because I just had no desire to be a lawyer. And I thought, I can't do this for 40 years until I'm old enough to retire and say, no, I want to move to Florida, which is where I live. And yet here I was after a corporate career, plus we had a daughter, I homeschooled her, I helped my husband build a business. Our daughter went away to college. And I remember thinking at that point, you know what? My husband and I both had this thought. We're either going to grow old with this nice company we have that was a cash cow and yet it didn't offer us anything of life or purpose, or we're going to just get off this train and do something else. Now, I want you to imagine this and let your listeners hear this. I told you when I was little, I wanted to travel the world and make new friends. I was an idea person and I wanted to share ideas about what makes us a better society. Imagine a woman in her early 50s saying, I want to be one of the most influential women in the world, and I'm going to put my face and my name out there as I never have before, and I'm just going to go for it. And I had people make fun of me when I started writing about how is it that we could live happy from the inside out. I literally had fellow bloggers looking at me like, that's no demo. And then I got an invitation from Huffington Post to be with them and to have my own portal. And then I have been since interviewed probably on 300 podcasts. I've been on
Wow.
the BBC, I've been on NBC TV. I was invited to speak at the first ever Nelson Mandela Day
Oh
celebrations,
my goodness.
invited up, and the UNESCO Center for Peace, which invited me, gave me the honorary title of Ambassador of Happiness. Now I go overseas and speak, and I've spoken there over a dozen times overseas. They literally introduce me and interview me on whether it's their newspapers, well, they're not newspapers anymore, or online publications or TV news as the ambassador of happiness. Now, I want you to think about this. What nerve did that take for a woman, age 50, to put herself out there? I didn't have any credibility, and yet here I am. Here I am talking to you, right? So what does that say for anybody anywhere else that has these certain desires and dreams that they never really pursued because they said, I don't have the credibility. It's too late. I don't have the money. I don't have that. I didn't get there because of money. I just kept following what I loved, what was important to me. And if one door didn't work, I'd find another one. And I just did what I liked. So in many ways, I am almost at some level the truth of the word that I give. Go and be who you are. Follow what you love. Incorporate it into where you live and what's important to you. And not only will you step out of the lines that you were brought up under, or the rules. Like, you don't see 50-year-old women that saying, you know, I think I'm going to go out there and get involved in media work or be a talking head or be invited at universities to moderate things like, how do we deal with hate in the world? You know,
you do
these
today,
things
and
are like new for me.
I think that's so inspiring, and I love that you're leading that trend because you're starting to see so much of that today.
We are.
And I'm so inspired by that. Like, as a younger man, I feel like that empowers me in so many ways when I see women successful late into their lives and just human successful, right? Like, that's really what we
human
want.
Successful, right? Because, you know, we could easily turn it into, oh, I'm black, oh, I'm Latino, oh, I'm, you know, I'm disabled at some level, right?
Totally.
It doesn't matter. And you know what? I have to tell you, I don't see color. I don't look at gender. I don't evaluate people by isms. When I meet them, I'm looking at their heart. I'm looking at, who are you? And what can I do to help extend who you are? What can I do to remind you of that candle that lives inside of you that's come to planet Earth and wants to be your bigger self? How can I make room for that? And I think we all have a piece of that in us, but I really do think so much of society institutions will tell us the opposite. And one of my favorite self-created quotes is, if the human race knew where we were going, wouldn't we have arrived by now? Think
totally,
about that.
Totally agree
right?
with that.
So why not be the new human race? Why not step out, even if it's just a little bit, and be a little bit more of your better and bigger and brighter self?
You know, I'm so in love with all of that. I'm very much aligned with what I feel like there's two different segments, right? So, like, I'm with you. I don't see color. I don't see race. I don't see gender, all of that stuff. But I think that there's still a segment of the population that does. And so I love your mission of, like, let's not focus on that. Let's focus on, you know, what we do see as opposed to what we don't. But I still, like, I want to do an episode coming up on Black Lives Matter, and just that movement overall, because I want to hear from people that can tell me something about that movement that I don't know, that I might not understand. And so
yes.
I think that that's, like, the one element that I want, especially when I have a platform, right, and I'm reaching people, and I can, I don't even know if I can make a difference or make an influence, but I want to try.
I love that, Sean. And you know something? That is what I do.
Yeah.
Wherever I am, this is why I love traveling. I love going to different cities. There are always protesters. There are people, they want your signature for something.
Totally.
I go to conferences. And you know what I always want? I always want to engage these people. I don't care who they are.
Yeah.
I want to engage them in conversation. I want to learn something. And do you know, by our engaging people and our making space for them and their story, do you know what happens on the other side? They start making room for you and your story. And in the middle of it, a lot of the barriers come down and the understanding comes in. And I think what you're doing is great. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to write to me when you do that interview.
I will.
And I think it's great.
Yeah, my friend actually just did a short film on the subject. And so I'm going to be talking to her and some of the cast of the film, but then also I'm trying to expand that conversation a little bit wider, because I think it's something that's important. And I think more Caucasians need to be having that conversation. But anyway, don't want to digress too much.
Oh, no. And I know you and I, we could probably digress on everything. But I will say this one more thing about whether it's Black Lives Matter or if it's the women's march that was in Washington. Let me just say this. I think people put themselves under a banner. But if you actually interview everybody, and maybe it's in the gay population, you interview people and you literally find people from every different background.
Totally.
They're all in it for a different reason. And it's so nice to be a bridge, to be a ribbon, someone that finds ways to engage in conversation and find ways that we can interact with one another. And I really think that it's in those places that we help mend fences and we find what unites us rather than divides us. And we make room for everyone to gain and everyone to prosper.
Amora, what do you hope will be your legacy?
How about this? A happier world. Seriously, if I could be responsible for one of the world's biggest block parties where everybody's invited and everybody wants to dance and everybody wants to have a great time together and they're so happy that they can't imagine having fights. That's what I would love to leave as my legacy, the world's biggest block party.
I love it. I love it. So I know that many people listening today have felt this conversation has resonated in some way. Tell us how we can connect with you. And I believe you also have some special gifts for us, if I'm not mistaken.
I do. All right. first way they could connect with me, if they love to listen to podcasts, connect with me on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. It's Maura Sweeney, Living Happy Inside Out. They're 10-minute long podcasts, and it'll give you always that little question that'll make you think about your own life, what's important to you, and there's always like a little story and a little call to action. That's the first thing. The second thing they could do is connect with me directly at Maura, M as in Mary, Aura, the number four, the letter U.com, more for you, because whoever you are, I'm for you. And they could get, on my newsletter list. They can subscribe to my blogs. I've got about 200 videos. The other things, as far as specials go for your listeners, I would love to share these. The first is this: if they would like to write to me, Maura at mauraforyou.com, ask me for a free copy of Exiting the Comfort Zone. If there's somebody today who's listening that said, you know what, I've been inside the box, or there's some things that I really wanted to do and I've been afraid to do them, I'd love to share with them my story about exiting the comfort zone. And it will make them laugh, it will make them feel inspired, and it will be energizing. So they could do that, more at moreforyou.com. Ask for the book Exiting the Comfort Zone. I'll send them a free PDF. And the last thing, if you've got people today that are listening thinking, you know, I like what she's saying and I'd really like more, I'd love to know how I could connect with who I am, the stories I was told, or the stories I told myself about myself. How do I extricate myself from situations I don't want to be in? And how do I move into the real me, the destiny me? I have an e-course. It's called Foundations of Happiness. And it is, if I could tell you, it is so chock full of things to read, things to watch, things to listen to, and then reflective questions. And they're all story-based. That course is available online. And for anybody who's listening, if they would like that course, they could get a 25% discount using the code, I think I called it,
You called it
outside the
outside the lines.
lines.
You did. And I'll have all of this in the show notes for people that want to reference that.
So that's it. They can connect with me. They could just write and say, hi, I like the interview.
Awesome. Yeah, please send all that over. I feel like we could do an entire episode on exiting your comfort zone. So I'd love for you to maybe come back sometime and we can talk about that.
I would love to.
Maura, I've enjoyed our conversation immensely. Thank you so much for your time and your amazing insight. Like I said, you have an invitation to come back on the show anytime you want.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Sean. I have to tell you, doing this today is exactly, if I had to write what I love to do in life, this is what I love. So thanks for having me on, and best wishes to you and everything you're doing there at Think Outside the Lines.
All right, I'd like to thank Maura for joining me today. And of course, I'd like to thank you for listening. Now, as always, you can find the links for everything we referenced in the show notes for this episode over at thinkoutsidethelines.com. If you're enjoying the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. And please share this episode with anyone you think could benefit from hearing it. Now go out there and pursue your passion today, because the best way to predict the future is to create it. For more information, please visit thinkoutsidethelines.com.